Last week we were at the end of chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, and then the first five verses, which really deal a lot with focusing on not what's seen and what's temporary, but focusing on what's unseen and eternal. And then kind of talking about if you're a Christ follower and you've made that decision in your life to say, I know nothing can make me right with God but the sacrifice of Christ, so I accept it. God, I give you my life. It's yours to use. Please use me. Then there's this great promise that everything we go through is kind of light and momentary compared to this eternal glory that waits for us. And that while we're here, our body is like a tent. But we have this mansion that we're looking forward to. And as I was getting into the text this week, there were some other things that I was going to preach on, but, and I don't know about all of you, but for me, I've run into so many difficult situations related to our election a couple of weeks ago that I'm going to do something I normally don't do. In fact, I very seldom ever talk about politics, but, and I'm not going to talk about it today, so don't get nervous. But I am going to kind of hit on some things that might relate to it that have been helpful reminders for me. And I felt like this passage this week and then next week and the week after all lend themselves really well to kind of a three-week series on the fact that we need to understand where our citizenship is and that we are truly ambassadors. If you've come to Christ at any point in time in your life, then your true citizenship is heaven. And you're an ambassador of God. You are the visible representative of an invisible kingdom. And I know this last week, thinking about that for me and reflecting on the security that I know is mine, even sometimes when I don't feel it, has really helped me to say, God, how do I love in this situation? How do I represent you in this? So that being said, I'm just going to kind of dive into this. I hope and pray that today is something where God kind of brings you back to a ground zero that you can build upon. I know many of us have Thanksgiving dinners we're going to and family with different belief systems and different people at work and at school that we deal with. And my hope, and I'd almost like to say I felt inspired last week, but that seems a little bit arrogant when you're on a lot of medication. So I'll just say what you get today is what I thought I was supposed to say. And if you don't like it, I have my passport here, so you can deport me pretty quickly. Okay? All right. Here we go. So, again, as we looked at last week, this whole sense of we're visitors here. We're aliens here. We're not to focus on what's seen and what's temporary, but on what's unseen and what's eternal. And Paul has been writing just about how great the availability of God is, the power of God is, and the ability of God to work in the lives of Christians that follow him all through 2 Corinthians. And it's a completely different way to look at what it means to live here. To live here being willing to die as Christ died for the benefit of others, and to not be dependent on all of your own skills, all of your own thinking, all of your own ability, but to kind of give that up so that you're a vessel that God can use and he can work through using that resurrection power that is a part of the Holy Spirit that we receive when we come to Christ. But to do that again, we have to give up control. We have to give up things that we might feel entitled to. We have to really slay the selfishness that's such a part of us that comes with our flesh so that we can be used by God for the benefit of others. And these are some of the great truths that are in this letter that he's writing to the church in Corinth. And I think they also hold a lot of answers to dealing with some of the difficulties that we face in America today. There's a lot of division in our nation right now, as many of you know. And there's anger, there's fear, there's disappointment. Regardless of what political party you are a part of or not a part of or how you define yourself, there is judgment in families, places of work, schools, and friendships. There are so many counterpoints in all of the media that are difficult to figure out. They're saying the exact same thing differently, or they're saying something completely different from the other. So it gets really hard to figure out how to navigate all of this stuff. And I think one of the key things is we have to remember who we really are and what our purpose is so that we can honor Christ and bring good from some of the chaos and the confusion that we find ourselves in. In the verses that we're going to look at today, there's some real practical truths and reminders also for believers about living in this tension, in this division of America today. So I've said all that. Let's begin again with what I've already said, just for emphasis' sake, or creating a baseline of truth that we can build upon today. And it's really important that we understand the true citizenship of a Christian. Now, this is my old passport, and I've been to Argentina. I've spent well over a year in Mexico on 1 and 2 week trips. I've been to India. I've been to El Salvador. I've been to Honduras. I've been to Canada. And on mission trips that I've been on, you have to have this. And you even get shots so that you don't either give or get something. And when I travel, one of the things that's interesting is my identity is very closely linked with the United States. I'm an American. This is my identity. And, you know, it's very easy to think that way when somebody says, what's your nation of origin? I mean, I always say America. I don't get into this long, well, I live in America, but I'm not focusing on what's seen and temporary. Really, I live in heaven. And there's this whole thing coming up on time outside of eternity and the fact that even though I'm here, I'm already there. Let me read you. I don't ever do that because it confuses me and everyone else. So I just say, yeah, I'm an American. But I think every once in a while, it's really good for us to step back and say, where is my home truly? What is my nation or my final home? Now, whenever I've been in other countries, so like when I was in Argentina, Janet was pregnant. This was 1990 with Drew. It was a good trip. I took 28 students down. And we were doing worship. We learned 28 songs in Castellano, which was the language there. And there were huge just revivals happening with hundreds of thousands of Argentinians coming to Christ. So we went down to provide worship in these huge auditoriums and football stadiums, soccer stadiums, as Americans. And it was a great trip. And about first day there, I almost got shot. So someone drove us out into the country, and the celebration was happening right when they have the celebration of the dead, El Muerte, and they dropped us off in front of this little store, and the first sign that there might have been problems is it's 1 in the morning, and there's razor wire and barbed wire, like 9 foot high, with a fence around this little store, and this is where we're supposed to be staying. So I had one of the high schoolers climb the wall and go bang on the door, because they didn't cover that in the training about what not to do when you're in another country. And we blended in. I think I had my typical flannel on. But no one's coming. So I tell the kid, hey, come back. Just get over here. And I look up the road, and there's about 60 people coming at us. And I'm thinking, nightlife. And they come, and a guy who I think was an off-duty cop puts a gun in my ribs and starts yelling at me in Spanish. Problem number two, I don't speak Spanish. But I did decide it was good just to put my hands up. And then the people came to the door and they explained it all and it was good. Until 4 or 5 in the morning when they wake you up and they give you something called mate. And you drink it out of something that looks like drug paraphernalia. And it's got like 12 times the caffeine of coffee. And it's good for about 12 hours of a jolt, which I never need anyway. So every day we're getting there and we're getting up really early, and then we're up late because we're doing these revivals. And I stayed at another place for 4 days where, because I was the pastor, they wanted to honor me. So every night when we went home at like midnight, the man I stayed with, who was a fairly wealthy Argentinian, treated me to like a Subway sandwich. It was like a foot long. And I kid you not, and I like mayonnaise. It probably had a half cup of mayonnaise on the bottom, all kinds of cheese, tomato, lettuce, fried eggs, meat, cheese, tomato, lettuce, fried eggs, and another half cup of mayonnaise for good measure. And if you didn't eat the food, we were taught you're being rude, which also includes the national dish, which is made out of tripe, menudo, and congealed fat. So like 4 or 5 days in, I'm realizing I'm an alien here. I'm missing sleep. I'm drinking this black substance that, boy, puts jolt to sleep. I mean, or would wake up jolt. And I'm longing to just get back to America already. And then I get a message that Janet's gone into premature labor with Drew, And as messages sometimes are, she's probably going to die and you're going to lose your son, came with it. So I left all my money with Matt's brother, Greg, who was in our college group, which I think was a mistake at the time too, and with just a Visa card, which they don't accept south of the border, and not being able to speak Spanish, was left at the airport to try and book flights and get back to the USA. Well, 4 months later, a couple days later, I got home and Janet was, well, I'm not going to say she was okay. You know, she was on home bed rest. Drew came out fine. But I can remember just longing to be back in America. You're eating weird stuff. You're not sleeping. Your body's getting jolted. Then you're having to eat a lot of weird stuff late at night. Then you got problems back where you come from. And everything just feels out of sorts. Well, I think that's how this should feel here when we think about our true destination and our true home. So I'm not real bothered by what's going on. In fact, I almost kind of expect it. And with every election and with many things that happen in our world today, I think it should almost feel like the norm to have some chaos and to have some problems. But I think the norm for us as Christians is not to bury our head in the sand, is not to join a political side. It's certainly fine to have values and things that you vote. I'd highly encourage that. But to learn how to have discussions and to sense out where other people are at so as not to do harm, but first and foremost, to be a representative of that kingdom that we're a part of, that we're going to end up in. So that being said, we are citizens of heaven. We're aliens and visitors here, ambassadors of our true home where we should long to be. So let's look at 2 Corinthians 5, 6 through 10. Love these passages. So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. Yes, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we're at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. The first thing that I see that comes out of this passage, and hopefully as we're going through this, you can apply it to some of the things that you're maybe currently facing or engaging as a result of our election. The first thing I see is that we're to be courageous. And this is not the kind of fight or flight choice you get where you decide my back's against the corner and rather than trying to run away, I'm just going to become mama bear and I'm going to attack. It's not that fight or flight kind of courage. It's a calm, purposeful, secure courage that comes from trusting in God and knowing that he is working in and through us as we remember who we are. As we submit our personal views and preferences to his lordship, we are to love God with all our heart, all our soul, and all our strength, but we are also to love, that's that other passage, our neighbor is ourself, which you all know, and that's why you didn't say it. It was just so implied, right? We are to love others as Christ has loved us. What does that look like when the discussions get heated? It is only through our relationship with him and our dependence upon him that this can happen. And this does not mean letting go of truth or abandoning biblical principles, but it means living a calm dependence upon Christ where we do not lose heart. And it's reflected through us and is visible in our attitudes and our actions, and especially with those who we might be in disagreement with. You know, Paul's repeated this theme several times in these passages, so we shouldn't be surprised at all. In chapter 4, verse 1, he says, having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. And in 4:16, he says, so we do not lose heart. And we don't because God is in charge, and we are obediently following him, trusting him to work in and through us. We do not lose heart, and we have good courage. The second thing is that we are to walk by faith, not sight, trusting the Lord completely. So we don't see him. He doesn't come down and he doesn't sit beside us and talk to us and put his arm around our shoulders and encourage us. I mean, we have the Holy Spirit within and we read the word and we have discussion and we sit and, you know, hopefully prayer life has evolved to a lot more than just talking to God, but actually sitting and listening to him. This is where the walking by faith rubber meets the road. When we begin to recognize that there is no circumstance that we will ever go through where he abandons us or he leaves us by ourselves. In fact, the harder things sometimes are, the greater the opportunity to depend upon him and have that sense of connection as the Spirit works through you because you're out of the way and God can now do what he wants to do. It's trusting in the fact that God is going to do something, that he is doing something, and that he can be counted on to accomplish his purposes in us that ways that we may never even see or that we can't even conceive of. And even if his purposes are different than what we might think we are entitled to, we're not alone. He is with us. We're to walk by faith, not by sight. And we have a full supply of his love, of his peace, of his joy, of his power to sustain us during the light and momentary troubles that we encounter while visiting this place before we go to be home. The third point in this passage is that we need to live day by day. I know that recently this has been a wonderful opportunity for me to evaluate what I say to the Lord in the morning, how I set myself each day, because sometimes it's very easy to think, well, I'm just going to kind of get up and go. Well, I have to remind myself of some of these truths. I have to remind myself that it's not about how I feel or what I want. And actually, one of the values that I hold near and dear, if I had a mantra that I've tried to follow over the years, and I know I'm not supposed to mix that, but I did tell you I went to India. So if I have a value or a concept or a principle or a conviction I follow, it's that when somebody hurts me, rather than being hurt, it should alert me to a need in them where I can be Christ-like and care for them. That is where the best ministry will ever happen in your lives, because you have to die and allow God to work through you to care for someone who you really don't want to. That's what I've been reminding myself of regularly, and that's a privilege, and that's a good thing, and that it's not about how I feel or what I want. It's about asking myself the question, what would love look like for that person? How could God use me? What might I have to give up or set aside right now that may even be right and true and good so that I can represent my kingdom, this invisible kingdom here on this visible place, so that they have a snapshot of God? Verse 8 says, yes, we are of good courage, and we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. Is that true of you? Do you have good courage, but do you just long to be in heaven? To be away from the body. You know, there's this spectrum that I think all of us land on somewhere, and either we're very confused and we try and treat America like it's where our home is, and we try and get as much out of it as we can, and that's how we live, or sometimes we become so heavenly-minded that we're really no earthly good. And on that spectrum, we need to say, you know, this is who I really am on the inside. This is who God's making me to be. And my purpose isn't just to get to heaven and skate by and, you know, learn all this wonderful stuff. It's to walk by faith, not by sight. It's to live with the power of God coming through me in the most difficult situations in a way where it's obvious he's doing it because he's working in me to bring those he loves to him. Paul's looking to the future, and he's summing up what we saw in the first five verses of this chapter, the great weight of glory that is awaiting us. You know, in a sense, we should be like children who are looking ahead to Christmas. I mean, it's not too late. We don't even have to wait for Black Friday. We have Black November now, right? I mean, we bought a dishwasher last week because it's Black November. I can't wait till next year when it's Black September. And from September 1st, well, we'll wait. We'll wait till after Memorial Day. Oh, wait, Labor Day. Well, we can go back to Memorial Day. And we can just have these great sales all the time so that on Friday morning, right after Thanksgiving, you can just wake up and eat leftovers. I mean, how glorious is that? So anyway, we should be like kids who are looking forward to Christmas. They're not looking back at Halloween. Or by next Friday or Saturday, they're not even looking back at Thanksgiving. They're just looking forward to Christmas. And unfortunately, they're probably looking forward to more of an American Christmas where there's gifts and presents and toys and fun. But they can look forward to it being a celebration of the birth of the Lord and Savior. And that's how we're to be. We're not to keep looking back. We're to be looking forward to this eternal home that God has prepared for us. And Christians are to focus on what lies ahead and on the joy that it awakens and the anticipation and that sense of hopeful excitement. And that's what Paul says should motivate in each one of us, this thought of living our day every day because we're going to be at home with the Lord. And the end goal comes next in verse 9. Our purpose is to please God. Our purpose. So Rick Warren's book is good, but your purpose, really simple. Please God. When? All the time. In what? Whatever's going on. Where? Wherever you're at. Just please God. And you know, the simplest thing when people are asking about God's will, what's God's will? Well, just live your life. What's the next thing you do that in the situation you're in? Where he's leading you, where he's directing you. And sometimes it's where you might not want to go, but you have that sense. Boy, the way I need to please God is I kind of need to die. I need to miss this football game. I need to not go do this. I need to care for this person. I need to love this person. It really is probably as obnoxious to me as I am to other people. And in the same way other people tolerate me, I want to tolerate them. More than tolerate, I want to love them. I want to care for them. God's will is that we please him in everything, at all times, and always, with everything that he gave to us. Notice in this verse 9, it says, so whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. So when we're at home, that means we're with the Lord. When we're away, that's currently now, when we're in our mortal bodies. But the purpose and the aim, regardless of where we are from that moment we stepped into eternity when we received Jesus Christ, is to please God. That is an eternal principle. That is not something that is going to change when we leave this earth. And the one reason to be here on earth is to please God, is to be a delight to him, is to live in such a way that his heart has joy in us. Is to choose to do things in such a way where God says, ah, that's my son. That's my daughter. They get it. They got it. They're walking by faith. They're loving others. They're caring for people in a sacrificial way. And they're even setting aside how they'd do it to allow me by my spirit to do it in a way that's going to produce things that they're not going to know about till later on when they're finally at home with me. And then they're going to be so blown away of what that one little act of kindness, of what that one little act of sacrifice, or that one little act of love actually accomplished in the lives of others. You know, I'm kind of a big picture guy. You know, Janet and I have been having a lot of discussions lately about, actually at our small group a month ago, she said, is it okay to just kind of want to live a simple life and honor the Lord and not be really busy? She asked me this about her in our small group. And I quickly said, no, what is wrong with you? And I said, well, yeah. And she said, but you don't ever think that way, do you? And I said, no, I wasn't made to think that way. I'm always thinking bigger, better, out here, out there. How can I do more? And, you know, I wear the woman out. The answer is no matter who you are, no matter how you're wired, no matter what God's leading you to do, it's just to please him, just to please him, so that his heart has joy and so that he can work in us. And the last thing here that I want to look at today is how we're motivated, and we're to be motivated by the Bema judgment seat. And this may be a new concept for some of you. I think about 6 years ago, John Strain had a young man that was in his ministry, and he actually did a Sunday morning with us where he did this incredible monologue about this very passage. And I know you can go online, and you can probably find things related to the Bema judgment well worth watching. But let me just kind of unpack this a little bit. I think it'll be helpful. So in verse 10, it says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body," that's why we're here, "whether good or evil." Okay? So oftentimes when people hear this verse, a couple of things happen, but the first one is that they kind of become very frightened. They develop an Old Testament view of God, and they misunderstand the concept of what's being said. Paul speaks of a judgment seat, and that often strikes terror in people's hearts, because immediately we're sitting and we're thinking, oh, great, I've got to give account for what I do that's good and what I do that's bad. I am in trouble, at least this last week. We forget about identifying our sin and confessing it and repenting, and we forget that God's forgiven us for those things. It just wreaks havoc oftentimes with our souls. And many people, unfortunately, identify this with Revelation 20, where it talks about all the dead, small and great, are standing before the great white throne of God. And in an awesome moment of judgment, the books are opened, and lives are reviewed, and eternal destinies are settled. And it's an incredible reality, and many think that this is what this reference here in 2 Corinthians is referring to. This is not a judgment in this passage that settles our destiny. This is a personal evaluation that every Christian will have publicly in a heavenly arena with the Lord. It's an accurate review of what our life has really been like. It is as though we walked together with the Lord back through all the scenes of our life, and he pointed out to us the real nature of what we did, what we said, what we were thinking, and the motivation behind it all. And if you understand grace, it's a good time to apply that here, because if you have fear thinking, oh man, well, you've missed the point of grace in Christ. But this is what happened, and the primary characteristic of this judgment seat, and again, it's often referred to as the Bema judgment, B-E-M-A, is that it is a time of disclosure to us of what's been hidden in the inner reaches of our hearts. And not only to disclose it to us, but others. In fact, the word that's used here for "we must all appear" literally says we shall all be unveiled before everyone. And this is the moment that Jesus spoke of when he said in 1 Corinthians through Paul, whatever is spoken in the secret places shall be shouted from the housetops. And I'm sorry, that was Jesus speaking. And then in 1 Corinthians, Paul wrote, "Therefore do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purpose."